All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we're actually going to finish up the Mishnah today, and then Amir Tzashem on next week. We'll focus a little bit on Purim. Okay, let's begin. So we left off, if I could have your attention, please. We left off in our last class focusing on some of the dramatic interpretations of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's statement. Not really understanding fully why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would say that the most important thing, the best thing, is shtika. How could he say that? After all, again, isn't there so much greater zechuyos in Torah, in Mas, in Tovim, and yet he's telling us that silence is the most important thing, or the best thing. So remember, again, we saw the Stefan Eshter Rebbe had his incredible insight that, in fact, again, it wasn't as much that he's focusing his idea in the context, the historical context, which is unfolding. Namely, again, that in this situation of ongoing struggle with the Romans, once we decide an armed conflict, we must stay the course. There is no room for diplomacy. Where there is a decision for action, there's no longer a time for talking. Where there's talking, we're not yet ready for action. In life, you have to choose a derech, an incredible lesson, that once you go ahead and decide you're going to go down a particular path, give it 1,000%. If you're not fully committed to the particular derech you are on, you will not be successful. And again, we saw that play out really in the historical context. So take a look at number 12. In the Yachal Yisrael Rabbi Lau, it goes back to the more simpler meaning of the Mishnah. And he says as follows, I'm Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid Miregensburg. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid said as follows, actually a very profound statement. Kishani medaber, ani mischarit. What does that mean? Kishani medaber, ani mischarit. When I speak, I regret it. What does that mean when I speak and I regret it? Yeah. 12. When I speak, I regret it. What does that mean? Can't take your words back. The truth is, if you think about it, if you say something to someone, if you were to go back and think about what you just said and ask yourself, could I have said that in a better way? Almost every single time the answer to that question is yes. It's an incredible thing. Every single time you say something, again, I could have said it with more empathy, I could have said it with more sympathy. Sometimes I could have said it stronger, right? Sometimes I could have said it softer. It's an interesting thing. And this is true, by the way, even if you're one of those people who thinks before you speak. You know, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Rav Shiva Taravadas, he said, you know what the worst word in the English language is? What's the worst word? I mean, be careful what you answer this, but what's the worst word in the English language? Worst word? He said, it's whatchamacallit. Whatchamacallit is the worst word. He says, why? Because if you say whatchamacallit, he says, that means that you did not properly think through what it is that you're about to say. A person should never speak until you know which words you need to use. Not only, again, like what general topic I'm talking on, but which words am I going to use to articulate the particular thought. Now, I don't know that most of us, I mean, halavai, we should just think before we speak, period. Right? Rav Pam is taking this a step further. Not only do you need to think before you speak, but you need to actually think about the word usages that you are going to employ before you speak as well. This is the incredible, incredible responsibility of Dibur. And this is Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid saying it, Kishani medaber ani mischarit. Every single time I say something, I regret it. I regret it. And what does that mean? He told his kids, I love them, and he regrets it? No, what he's saying is, every single time I say something, I realize that I could have said it better. Now, by the way, it goes without saying that these words ring so much more true in the world in which all of you are growing up. Because in the age of social media, so right, one thing that has suffered the most is Dibur, right? Relationships is for sure, but the way people talk, I'll ask you, if you want to go ahead and text someone, I love you, how would you write that? I-L-U-V-U. Or maybe today you just use an emoji. Do you realize like how ridiculous that is? Excuse me for just a moment. How ridiculous that is? If you really love someone, then you love them enough to take the time to spell out the word. If I don't have the time to go and write I, capital I, L-O-V-E, Y-O-U, period. You should put in punctuation also, right? Then I don't love you because I'm just kind of like snapping off something quickly to you. Meaning understand that everything has become cheapened in the world in which you live, in the world of instant communication, which has many, many milas and many positive things. But we've how many times has it happened? I will tell you, this happens to me at least once a week. I texted someone. I texted someone regarding a very important community matter, and I got like an automated response that he was out of the office, and I got a text back from him that said, "On the slopes, can you deal with this?" It wasn't meant for me. It was meant for his partner in the organization. But what happened? And I felt terrible because he was terribly embarrassed. I can imagine, on the slopes, can you take care of this? So I'm pointing out, but what's happened? Now, how does, and by the way, not a week goes by, I'll tell you, Mamish, not a week goes by that I don't get, like, an accidental email from someone that they meant to send to someone else, or this or that. Because we communicate so quickly, we have forgotten to take the time to go ahead. And you know how many times it happens that people get upset, they fire off an email. And then what happens?
They calm down,
and you say to yourself, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. Now, you see, the problem is, it used to be, if you got upset and you wanted to write someone a piece of your mind, what would you have to do? You had to write a letter, right? And it takes time because you have to get postage. So you have time to cool down. Now, you could be in a horrible mood for 10 minutes, and if you're in front of your phone, you're in front of your computer, you could fire off the most scathing piece of correspondence. And once it's out, you're done. You're done. I think WhatsApp you could delete, right? The post, right? But even that, is it really deleted? But if a person sees it, they see it. It's an incredible thing. So the age, and again, I want to point out, this is not like an anti-technology rant. Technology is good when used in the right way and has many positive. Our ability to communicate with people more regularly is such an incredible thing. The challenge is that communication as a whole has become cheapened. And we have to be careful with that, because often we end up saying things, you know, like, I will tell you, and this is a good sensitivity to have, if you are corresponding via email or text with people who are a good number of years older than you, it's always important to include proper pleasantries. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen? They're going to think what? You're angry. Meaning, you see, you might communicate with each other without saying, hi, good morning, how are you? Right? What time does class start? ? Right? And you might have, I'm sure, something like this shorthand that you could just fire off to each other. But that's a new form of communication. People who are older than you are not used to that form of communication. It might even apply, I don't know how tech savvy your parents are, but you have to be sensitive to these things, that the norms of communication have fundamentally changed. It's a new thing that you could send a message to someone without saying, good morning. Good morning, or dear so-and-so. Dear so, I mean, and again, it's okay, I'm not telling you to go and write dear so-and-so in your text messages, but I'm just understanding, you laugh at this, but I'm just pointing out to you, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you wouldn't send a message to someone without a greeting of some sort, without something. It's different. And again, it's not bad, it's just different. But because we communicate much more informally and because we communicate much faster, it requires us to be exceptionally vigilant with what we're writing, emailing, texting, tweeting, Instagramming, Facebooking, whatever it is, because it's so easy to get it out. And then it happens and suddenly I say, probably shouldn't have said it that way. Probably shouldn't have done it that way. So Rabbi Yehuda, because remember again, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is living in the 1100s, right? Living in the 1100s. And what is he saying? He's saying, you know, Nebuch, every single time I say something, I regret it. Okay, Shani Medaber, Ani Mischari, Ad Shelo Divarti. So he goes on, he says, before I said anything, Ani Shalit, I'm sorry. Ani shalit umosha al diburai. So this is actually a very profound statement. Before I say something, what does that mean? Ani shalit umosha al diburai, which means what? I rule over my words. Isn't this an incredible thing? Before you say something, you rule over your words. The moment about kishiyetsi adibor mipi, the moment I say something, hadibor moshel bi. What does that mean? What I say rules over me. Isn't that an incredibly profound statement? Before I speak, I rule over my words. After I speak, my words rule over me. And that's true, because how many times has it happened that you say something or you write something, and again, you meant it one way, but sometimes it's misconstrued, either intentionally or unintentionally. That's what happens. Once the words are out, they are no longer yours to control. Once the words are out, they're Rishus HaRabim, and once they're Rishus HaRabim, ultimately anyone could do anything and everything with them. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, Rayon Zeh, Mekor Rabbi Medrash. So this idea really is rooted in the Medrash. Amar Rabbi Levi, Shisha Dvarim Mishamshin Es HaAdam. Shlosha Birshuso, V'shlosha Inan Birshuso. There are three things, three different parts of the body which serve man. Three he has control over, three he doesn't have control over. HaPeh, HaYad, V'haRegel Birshuso. The one thing you have control over is your mouth, your hands, and your feet, right? Which means what? So again, I can't always control what my eyes see, because sometimes if something happens in front of me before I have the opportunity to look away, I see it. I see it, but yes. Go ahead.
What are the three things that
I'm not? I have to look up the Gemara. I don't remember the other three parts of the body that it's referring to over here. Probably the eyes, the ears. I don't know what the third is. The eyes and the ears, because you can't always control maybe the nose, what you smell, right? But for sure, the eyes and the ears are two out of the three. You can't control always what you see and what you hear. But your feet, your mouth, and your arms, those you have complete autonomy over. So this is an incredible idea. I have control over my koach ha-dibur. Machmas chashivuso shel dibur. V'hasakana ha-temuna b'diburim. Mi'usara u'mazikin. Now, here, he's describing an incredibly lofty and high level. Because I have control, and because if I don't control it, the damage could be intense, I really have to be vigilant with the words that come out of my mouth. And I control this. This is very, very important. You know, it's interesting. Do you know, if you ever met someone with Tourette's, so the reason why when you encounter someone with Tourette's, it's incredibly dramatic is why. One of the manifestations of Tourette's is you can't control some of the things that you blurt out. And if you've ever been someone with a person with Tourette's, it's very jarring. It's interesting. You could see someone with a physical handicap, with a cognitive handicap. Okay, you know, we get used to it. The reason why Tourette's is so unnerving is because a person doesn't control one of the core things that Chazal tell us are under our control. So the ability to control my dibur, what comes out of my mouth, is one of the core things that I control. When that control system is not intact, it's very overwhelming and unnerving. I have the ability to control what I say. Now, I want to point out over here, you see, whenever we talk about topics like this, it often kind of devolves into a discussion about Lashon Hara. This is not about Lashon Hara. This is about general use of my koach hadibur. How do I use my power of speech? What type of words do I use? When do I use those words? With whom do I share my koach hadibur? How much do I speak versus how much do I go ahead and put effort into the koach of remaining silent? This is incredible discussion, because the greatest gift we possess is the ability to communicate it, but the only way it remains a gift is if it's used wisely. He goes on. Amnam kasha adavar. I'm in the third paragraph down, and the second line. Amnam kasha adavar. Ultimately, again, it's difficult. It's difficult for a person to control how they speak, what they say, and when they speak. See, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for us? You're all familiar with this idea. Va'al kein bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'adam misayim. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for us helpers. What are the helpers? Shesogrim ba'ad haloshen va'ozrim lo b'shmira amotza'eha v'halo heima lechayim hasafasayim v'hashinayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us something incredible. What did He create for us? He created for us jaws and the cheeks, lips, as well as teeth. And what does all of that do? Those are the multiple walls in front of my tongue, in front of my koach hadibur. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely created us in this way, physically and metaphorically, to have many layers of protection around the koach hadibur, teaching me what? Not just simply that I shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. That we know. We're not even talking about that because that's obvious. But that I should think before I use my... Anything that's protected, anything that's behind layers of protection, means that it's going to be used sparingly. If the Koach HaDibur is behind layers of protection, it means that it needs to be used with Chachma. It needs to be used with wisdom. Kichol Shadavar Kashi Yoser, Kain, Gadol Ma'aloso Shalom Mesavis Osekin. And in general, wherever something is most challenging, then what? Then ultimately, again, one who goes ahead and is successful ultimately gets more reward. In other words, the harder something is, the more reward you get for being successful. So he quotes here something amazing. B'shem ha'bal shem tov muva, sha'adam ha'shosik arboim yom, shora alav ruach ha'kodesh. Incredible idea. If a person is quiet for 40 days, ultimately, again, they get Ruach HaKodesh. I'm sure you've heard this idea before, but you ever wonder to yourself, why do you get Ruach HaKodesh for staying quiet for 40 days? Why that? Or what does that tell you? I'm sorry. So first of all, it shows control, but why does that result in Ruach HaKodesh? It's definitely an incredible amount of self-control, but why does that result in Ruach HaKodesh? What it tells you is how much we mess ourselves up through the abuse of speech. What it tells us is that day in and day out, knowingly and unknowingly, we compromise ourselves and we compromise others through Koach HaDibur. This is interesting, by the way. Like, it doesn't say if you learn Torah for 40 days straight, you get Ruach HaKodesh. It doesn't say that if you go ahead and you give tzedakah 40 days straight, you get Ruach HaKodesh. You get Sechuyos. It's incredible. How do I get Ruach HaKodesh? Don't speak for 40 days.
So you get so many brachos.
Oh, so here's what's interesting is, so now what we begin to see is the cost-benefit analysis. It's very true. If you're quiet, you're saving yourself from damage. But what else are you losing out on? Doing good, right? Remember again, the ability to make another person feel good through a kind word. The ability to be a balas chesed, not even with your hands, right? Not even through dynamic tid, but through dipur, is so incredibly profound. It appears in the eyes of Chazal that when you look at how generally speech is used, speech causes more harm than good, which is just an interesting analysis. Now again, for most times it's academic because none of us are going to stop talking. So then our goal becomes use of speech to lift up the other. But when Chazal are looking on a panoramic view, how is most speech used? Chazal understand that most speech is used in a deconstructive way. I'll tell you something amazing. The truth is, what's the greatest proof to this, that most speech is used in a deconstructive way? Look at the news, right? When you read the news, so most stories are about what? Negative things. You know, it's interesting, on my computer there's a news app, and there's a section that says good news. Right, it's in good news. Like, you could click on it. There's like a section in this. I thought to myself, like, how sad is this? So what that says is, if there has to be a little box that says good news, that means what? That means what? Right. And by the way, like, you know, it's interesting. Like, what are the stories in good news? You know, somebody climbed up a tree to save a cat. Someone crossed an old lady. Again, really what it is like simple acts of human kindness. It's actually very interesting. And it's fascinating that it's there because someone, I don't know who did this, but obviously someone said, listen, this is like ridiculous. This is ridiculous. You read the news and what is it all about? Politics is terrible. Natural disasters, horrible, all this stuff. So you know what, let's make a little box called good news, just to remind people that there's good in humanity, there's good in the world. But what Chazal is saying is, unfortunately, the majority of speech is used in a deconstructive manner. That's just a reality. I don't know that that means Klal Yisrael. I think it's just the world, the way the world works. And again, that's why you go back to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Every time I say something, I regret it. Therefore, Baal Shem Tov says, if you don't speak for 40 days, you get Ruach HaKodesh. Now again, I want to be clear. I don't know what the Baal Shem Tov is saying, don't speak for 40 days and you will get Ruach HaKodesh. I don't think he's encouraging people to do this. I think what the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is saying is just understand what we do wrong day in and day out with our speech. Just appreciate that knowingly and unknowingly. The raya to that is, if you don't speak, you get Ruach HaKodesh. So he's not encouraging us to be silent, but he's showing us through the achievement of Ruach HaKodesh what we ruin, often day in and day out, knowingly and unknowingly with our deep work. Question?
I was just going to say, like, I had surgery where I couldn't, wasn't allowed to talk for a week, and just not being able to speak and just being like an observer, it's just, you just see the whole world in a different perspective, and it's just,
beautiful.
It's like, that could help you, definitely. And, you know, your roughness and how you...
Beautiful.
It's not easy, but it gives you a much different perspective of the world.
Beautiful. But your point is excellent, which is I wasn't even thinking about this until you said it. I stopped talking and listened. So then I was able to hear what you were saying, which is an incredible idea that it's true. When you're talking, by definition, you're not listening. When you're quiet, you're an observer. When you're an observer, you're able to take things in. This is very important. You know, if you're ever having a conversation with someone, when do you know it's time to stop talking? If you're ever in a conversation with someone and like you're talking and they're like, right? So you should know, and we know this clinically, the moment that a person begins to respond, even just with their physical cues, is the moment they've stopped listening. It's actually very, very, very important for knowing how to interact with people. When people are listening, you could tell they're a passive listener. The moment they're like, you know, like sometimes like they're sitting on their chair, they're like, you know, like sitting, moving to the edge. The moment you start, you know already they're not listening. They're not listening anymore. So this, and again, which is not bad. It's just the reality. So therefore, if someone's not listening, you might as well not waste your breath talking. You might as well just simply listen. Obviously, they have something they need to say. They need to say it now. So you might as well just listen to what it is that they have to say because they are no longer listening to you. But this is an incredible idea also. This power of silence. And maybe that's another idea in the Baal Shem Tov also. Maybe that's what the Baal Shem Tov is saying. That we miss out on so many opportunities for growth because we don't pay attention to the world around us. And maybe if you're silent, for 40 days, how much you could learn from everything around you. That maybe that's what makes you a Kodesh. Beautiful, beautiful insight. All right, let's go on. He says as follows. He quotes over here just a number of Ma'amari Chazal. He says, Chazal, Hirbu lahalal v'shabech es hashtika. Chazal went ahead and spoke excessively about the power of silence, the praised silence. U'kifi sh'olam im'areim harabim hamidar miskusa, naskir kama misochem. So listen to this. He quotes over here just a couple of Gemaras. Gemara Pesach HaSachem. Yof eshtika l'chachamim. Shtika is very beautiful for wise people. Kavachomer letipshin is a great line, right? Silence is wonderful for wise people. Kavachomer for foolish people. Arim ma'arava, mila b'sela, mishtuka b'trin. In Eretz Yisrael, they used to say that ultimately, again, if a word is worth one sela, silence will be worth two. Siag l'chachma shtika. Ultimately, again, the protective fence for wisdom is silence. Ma umnasal shal adam ba'olam azeh. What is a person's most important occupation in this world? Yosim atzmo ki'ilein. He should make himself like a mute person. Don't always talk. Take the time to listen. Take the time to measure. So I think there's the duality of this lesson. And therefore, again, this is what Rav Shemuel was telling us. All of my days I grew up amongst great people. What Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying is sometimes the greatest thing you learn from great people is what? Is the ability to be silent. Is the ability to measure their words. Is the ability not to say every single thing that comes to their mind. Is the ability to decide when to speak and when to hold their tongue. The ability to know when they should be a medaber and when they should be an ilim. And sometimes that is the great... So Rav Shimon Gamliel might actually be saying, in addition to all the beautiful Torah I learned from these great people, perhaps the most profound lesson I learned was the necessity, the importance, and the profundity of silence. I want to end this Mishnah by focusing on the death of Rav Shimon Gamliel. If you take a look at number 13, so the Gemara Maseches Avos says as follows. This is Avos Rabbi Nosson. So listen to this. Remember, as I mentioned before, so Rav Shimon Gamliel was one of the Asar Harugei Malchus, one of the 10 martyrs. Remember, again, the Asar Harugei Malchus, even though we read about them at the same time, they did not all die at the same time. They died over a span of time. In fact, some of them were not even alive at the same time. So Rav Shimon Gamliel was amongst the first of the Asara Harugi Malchus. We're going to see there's a historical debate if he was the first one executed or the second one executed, but he was amongst the first two. So let's look number 13. Master Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shmuel, Shayotim Lehari. Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel, now who's Rabbi Shmuel? This is Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. Right, Rav Shmuel was the Kohen Gadol at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. The son of the Kohen Gadol as well. Now, interestingly enough, as much as we said that the Kahuna Gedola was corrupt and was sold, apparently, again, there were points in time where there were still righteous Kohanim Gedolim. So what happens? They're being led out to be executed by the Romans. Vayir Rav Shimon Amiel Bochem. Rav Shimon Amiel was crying. Amrali Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi, Ma'ata Bocha. So listen to this incredible exchange. So Rabbi Shimon Amiel and Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol are being led out to be executed. Rabbi Shimon Amiel starts crying. Rabbi Shmuel says to him, Rabbi, why are you crying? Why are you crying? In just a few steps, you'll be with your forefathers. What does it mean in just a few steps you'll be with your forefathers? You're going to die, Al-Kiddush Hashem. It's horrible, it's terrible, but it's nothing to cry about, nothing to be sad about. The Olam Haba that's waiting for us and the ability to be with our avos is so incredible. Why are you crying? Listen to this. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says something amazing. Do you know why I'm crying? Because I am still young in years. I'm still young in years. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was not such a young man. He was 70 years, somewhere in his 70s when he was executed. So why? What does he mean when he said, I'm young in years, katmon bashanim? What do you think he was saying? I'm sorry? I could have said much more. I could have done much more. I still have so much more to accomplish. Rav Shimon Gamliel is not crying over his imminent death. He's not dying because he's scared of dying on Kiddush Hashem. He's not crying because he's scared of his Olam Haba. He's not crying because of any of that. He's crying because I had so much more I wanted to do in this world. I had so much more I wanted to accomplish. Now, I always find this statement so overwhelming. Because if Rav Shimon Gamliel is crying as he's being led out to die on Kiddush Hashem, and he's crying because he doesn't feel that he fulfilled enough, it creates an incredible and overwhelming responsibility on us, right? There's a great sign of Shimon Gamliel is crying moments before his death. I'm still so young, not biologically, right? Not age-wise, but I'm still so young in terms of my life accomplishments. So much more I could do, so much more I can be. Amar lei v'hari hu omer misuka shnasa obeit im ma'at v'im harbe yochal. Ultimately, again, so he says, what happens? So Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol tries to give nechama to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, telling him, don't worry, it's not about how much you accomplish. It's just amount that you try to accomplish. You put in your effort, you did your best, you served your Creator, you served your people. That's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of you. You don't have to do anything additional. Achinam. So, listen to this. So this is actually quite amazing. So Rabbi Shmuel says, but really, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, are you telling me that you never did anything wrong, that you wouldn't deserve to die? Now listen to this conversation. These two men are trying to figure out what could they have possibly have done during their lifetime that would warrant this punishment, this death from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Shmuel, Kohen Gadol, says to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi, are you sure you never did anything wrong? Listen to the examples he gives. He says, Miyamecha, Lobasa Isha Lish Olacha Al Nidasa. Is it possible that a woman came to ask a Nida Shaila? Or Vaha Ish Al Nidro? Or a man came to ask a question about a Neder? Vaha Yisa Yashin? O Soed? O Shemalo Haisa Sha'a Penuya? O Shemalo Hinicho Hashamish Dekanes? Get ready for this. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol says to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you know, Rabbi, maybe one time someone came to ask you a Shaila, and you were sleeping, or you were eating, or it wasn't a convenient time, and the shamus turned the person away. Maybe that's why you're getting this punishment. What is Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol saying to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? First of all, it's an incredible window into leadership. What's leadership about? Accessibility to the klal, being there for the klal. You know, there's a famous story. Rav Aram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, who was the first chief rabbi. This was before the founding of the State of Israel. It was still Palestine. He was the first chief rabbi, and he was very sick. He died of cancer when he was already in the beginning of his illness. So his Rebbetzin put up like hours on his office door. Right? These are the hours you could consult the Rav. And the next day she came back, and the sign was taken down. So she's very upset. She put up another sign. This happened a couple of days. Finally, she said, you know what, I'm just going to wait here. I'm going to see who is the mechutzav who takes down the sign. And sure enough, again, who was taking down the sign? None other than Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha himself. So I said to him, what are you doing? You know, you have your health, you need to... And he said something amazing. He said, I am an Eved to Klal Yisrael. And an Eved does not tell the Adon what his hours are. It's the Adon who tells the Eved what his hours are. Now, obviously, that is an incredible level of commitment. That's a Rav Kook. That's like a Moshe Rabbeinu level of commitment. And the truth is, that's a Tzadik level of commitment. That was a Rav Shimon Gamliel level of commitment. So literally, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol is telling Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rebbe, I'm not questioning you, but is it possible that maybe one time someone came to ask you a Shaila and you said, not now? Someone came to ask you a question and you said, or your Shamus said, sorry, the Rav isn't available for questions right now. And Rabbi Shmuel says something amazing. Rabbi Shmuel says, excuse me, I keep mixing up the names. Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel says, Amar Le Velo, Al-Chinom. So he answered, no, never happened. Never happens. Isn't this incredible? Right? That at the end of the day, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, I never turned anyone away. At the end of the day, I never told someone it's not a convenient time. I never told someone that they can't ask the Shaila. I always gave them my undivided attention. The incredible paradigmatic example of an absolute and true manhig. Now the story goes on. If you see for a moment to number 14... this is actually quite amazing. So actually, before we go to 14, just to finish up in 13. So if you look in number 13, 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. So what happens? Ba ha'aspak lator. So the Roman executioner came along. Lahat is roshal shirab and shimming amil. And he came to execute Rav Shimon Gamliel first. Why were they executing Rav Shimon Gamliel first? Because he was the nasi. Right, because he was like the political leader of the Jewish people. So they were going to execute him first because that was even like more dramatic. So what happens? Rabbi Shmuel, Lo Kain, Ani Gadol Mimenu, Ani Kohen Gadol Ben Kohen Gadol, Bo Vehetiz Roshi Tchila. So this conversation defies any level of comprehension. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol says to Roman executioner, kill me first. Kill me first. I am more chashiv than Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Why? Because I'm the Kohen Gadol, the son of a Kohen Gadol. What was Rabbi Shmuel really asking for? To die first. Why? He could not bear to see the execution of his beloved Rebbe, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So he tries to convince the Roman executioner, I am more important than Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. I'm a Kohen Gadol, the son of a Kohen Gadol. Execute me first. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Lo Kein, Ani Gadol Me'er. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says to the executioner, they're arguing with the executioner. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, it's not true. I'm more chashiv. So who could even imagine these conversations? Who could even imagine these circumstances? Arguing who should be executed first. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying it should be me first. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol saying it should be me first. What happens? The bottom line, the Gemara says, Ba'as paklator, vehet is rosho, shrib Shimon Gamliel. According to there are different girsos, but according to apparently the more authoritative girsa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is murdered first. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has his head, he's decapitated by the Romans. He is killed right in front of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. And what happened? Vahaya Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Vahaya Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, Megafafo, Umenashko Uboche. And again, in such a tragic scene, Rabbi Shmuel held on to the lifeless body of his Rebbe, of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and he hugged him, and he kissed him, and he cried, Va'omer, Hapesh Shahaya Asuk Batora, Harehu Male Chatzatz, and ultimately, again, it says, the mouth that was filled with Torah is now filled with dirt. Again, in a dramatic, overwhelming scene. So the Romans execute Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He is the first of the Asara Haruge Malchus. His beloved Talmud, who was the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shmuel, holds on to his lifeless body, crying, hugging, kissing his Rebbe, and only immediately afterwards, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol is executed as well. Go to number 14, and this will conclude. If you look at the last couple of lines in number 14, look at the last five lines. Ba'a Shmuel, Shmua, Eitzer Rabbi Akiva, Eitzer Rabbi Huda ben Bava. Word gets back to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Huda ben Bava that both Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel have been executed. Amdu v'chagru masneim sakim v'karu espik deyem. They put on sackcloth, they tore their clothing. V'amru, achinu yisrael shamanu, ilu shama'unu. Our brothers and sisters, listen to us. Ilu tova haisa ba the olam tchila lo hayu mekablin al Reb Shlo hayu mekablin ela Reb Shim Reb Shlo Reb Yishmal. If there were any blessing to be showered down upon this earth, the two men who would be most deserving of this blessing would be Reb Shimon and Reb Yishmal Kohen Gadol. Va'achshav galu yahana haya lifnei mi she'amar v'haya olam shelesof paranius gedolos asidos lava liolam. So Rabbi Akiva says something amazing. The death of these two great tzaddikim in a very dramatic and barbaric fashion tells us that there is about to be a very dark night that is about to descend upon us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took these tzaddikim out of the world so that they should not have to see the suffering of their Jewish brothers and sisters. Rabbi Akiva understood that the death of the two Gidoli Hadar, the death of first Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi, and then afterwards the execution of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, signaled the end. Signaled the beginning of the end, the Churban Beis Hamikdash, and the dark diaspora that would ensue after. As Rabbi Akiva said, again, the Rachmanis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to remove these tzaddikim ultimately before the incredible darkness devolved upon the world. And the amazing part is, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel teaches us this incredible lesson. He tries to enfranchise and create achdos within the ranks of Klal Yisrael, but his death as the first of the Aseret Hargei Malchus begins the true process of Churban Bayis Sheni. Yes?
Is this
where
the moment can ask Hashem
for Shkita? Yes, so,
yes. Did the Malachim not understand, but anyone that went to Gandhi did?
You know, I guess. I don't, it's hard for me to know. What's being mentioned over here is, remember again, we read this story twice a year, right? We read this story on Tisha B'Av, and we read this story in Yom Kippur as well. So ultimately, again, in the story of Yom Kippur, we have Rabbi Shmuel Shimon Gamliel ultimately going up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asking what's going on over here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Gezeira hi milafanai. What that means, people know what Malachim don't. I don't know. I don't know. Yes.
Hi.
Sure. No, neither of them wants to see the other one die. They can't bear to see the other one die. You're letting the what?
He's letting the other person see him die. It's like, you don't want to feel that way.
You can't ask kashas like that. You're dealing with abnormal circumstances. You want to say, they should have had better midos as they're about to... I don't know. I would venture to say these men knew their midos, but they also understood they were ready. I want to be clear. They accepted their fate to die al kiddush Hashem. I guess they just could not bear to see the other one executed. I hear. I don't know. I can't ask kashas on their midos in this circumstance. No. So remember again, it's the death of these tzaddikim in this circumstance. These tzaddikim are not just dying of old age, right? These tzaddikim are being murdered by the Romans. So Rabbi Akiva understood, if the Romans have such control over us that they have the ability to execute the Gedolei Hadar, then that shows that a significant darkness is coming. Very different than a tzaddik leaving this world at an advanced age in the comfort of his home. No one lives forever. Anytime a tzaddik leaves this world, there's a diminution of the light in the world. But no. It does not mean that when a tzaddik dies, terrible things are going to happen. This is Rabbi Akiva understanding. The death of the tzaddikim at the hands of the Romans indicates to us that the Churban is coming. All right, stop over here. Mir Hashem. We will pick up next week with Purim.